The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the fifth chapter. Once while Jesus was standing beside the lake of Gennesaret, and the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God, he saw two boats there at the shore of the lake. Those who were fishing had gone out of the boats and were washing their nets. Jesus got into the boats, the only one belonging to Simon, and he asked him to put out a little way from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the crowds from the boat. And when Jesus had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we have worked all night long but have caught nothing. Yet if you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done this, they caught so many fish that their nets were beginning to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats, so that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." For Simon and all who were with him were amazed at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Do not be afraid. From now on you will be catching human beings." When they had brought their boats to shore, they left everything and followed Jesus. The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. There's a familiar term that most of you have probably heard of, which is bait and switch. Technically, it is a term that is used for borderline illegal acts of selling. When I was looking for a car a few months ago, I found this one vehicle that looked to be selling for a really, really good price. And so I called and negotiated a little bit with the seller and asked to see the vehicle. And they said, "Well, the vehicle is actually in Texas at a shipping center. It's all ready to be shipped to you free, of course, but all you need to do is pay $5,000 to me first, and we'll ship the car to you, and then if you like it, well, then you can send the rest of the payment later, and it will all be good." Yeah, right. Bait and switch. Even openly legal transactions today seem to be more bait and switch. Abby and I flew to Minnesota to see family over New Year's, and I found out of these new cheap tickets that the airlines are currently selling nowadays. Again, unbeknownst to me, I show up with our tickets, and they sit you. They don't sit families together anymore. So we show up at the airport with baby Soren, and our tickets show that, you know, we're sitting in two middle rows, literally 20 rows that are dividing us. "Oh, I am sorry, sir," the airport attendant said to me. "This is our new basic economy fare, and I can't sit you together." Pretty soon, it seems like they're going to start selling spots in the airplane baggage compartment and say, "Well, if you want an actual seat while you travel, you'll have to upgrade your ticket." Bait and switch seems to be more and more a part of our lives nowadays. It is probably because of our stronger bait and switch detectors that the lectionary strategically carves up our Old Testament reading today of Isaiah. This story, the call story of the prophet Isaiah, is relatively famous, at least in church circles. Pastor Daniel Dish at Atonement Lutheran talks about how he has this one reader in worship who always asks when this story is going to come up, because she always wants to read it, and she always wants to read it with gusto at worship. And the story of Isaiah is popular in many ways, in ordinations, in confirmation, in blessings and healings. We, in many ways, love the seemingly weird fiery coal, right, that touches our mouth. And Isaiah saying, "Here I am, send me." And if the story just ended at verse 8, then that's what this story, I think, would be. A very weird but oddly inspiring call story, right? Except this story doesn't end at verse 8, does it? It goes on until verse 13, which the lectionary titles Optional Lectionary Additional Verses. You'll notice that these verses, actually, in our own bulletin, are bracketed today. You can probably see why most ordinations don't read these verses as part of Isaiah's call story, because what God says here is extremely uncomfortable. Make the mind of this people dull, and stop their ears and shut their eyes, so that they may not look with their eyes and listen with their ears and comprehend with their minds and turn and be healed. And then I said, "How long, O Lord?" And God said, "Until cities lie waste without inhabitant and houses without people, and the land is utterly desolate." Is this a bait and switch move? Is the lectionary saying, well, for a nicer call story and the luxury of not dealing with God's anger, you'll have to upgrade? Our optional additional verses here, in my mind, make it look like exactly that. We want the nice call story without having to deal with what God is actually saying here. So what is God saying here in Isaiah? How do we make sense of these what seem to be very angry verses? Well, simply put, the context here is exactly that, actually, anger. God is angry at what is going on. One of the strong themes of the book of Isaiah, especially the first part of Isaiah, what biblical scholars normally say is first Isaiah, the theme of first Isaiah is of forgetting. Forgetting. The people of God are forgetting who they belong to. They are forgetting the teaching and law of God in loving the neighbor, of sharing one's gifts and serving the poor. Isaiah documents many counts of greed, of theft, of corruption, of malice, of unfair justice laws. All of these things have a direct effect on the poor and vulnerable. Unfair taxing and driving families into poverty, stealing food and clothing, paying no attention to the sick, and defacing the temple for worship. All of these things are happening, and happen with a consequence. Most famously, that in the book of Isaiah, the kingdom of Israel actually looks so much inward that it collapses and is invaded by the ever more powerful empire of Babylon. Perhaps the church tends to treat this text as a bait and switch text, not because of what God says here, but because the church, and I think society as a whole, are uncomfortable with God being angry. Our entire Advent and Christmas seasons mostly focus on love and grace, a sweet, helpless baby, right? Oh, how cute. That's a God that we can picture. That's a God of love, of grace, of hope. But a God of anger, we aren't so comfortable with. Anger as an emotion, I think, is uncomfortable and imitating, intimidating. Many people aren't taught on how to deal with anger in a healthy way. So we place these unhealthy images actually on God. God is the picture of health. So God must not get angry. This is what most of us, including myself, say, in order to tame down these texts we would rather not deal with. But let me say some things in response to this. Not having a faith in a God that has room for anger, actually, I think, cheapens God. Just like anger makes up a portion of who we are as whole human beings, anger and judgment also make up a portion of the wholeness of the divine. When we say God does not get angry at children being separated from their parents at the border, or that God does not get angry at targeted housing policies that impact disproportionately people of color, or the sexual slavery and murder of hundreds of Native American women across the country, or the utter and blatant inaction on climate change that will have disastrous effects on all of the futures of our children. It cheapens God to make God, in a way, not angry. In the book of Genesis, God says famously, "And it was good." Well, when we fall short of being good, when we kill each other or take away from each other, God gets mad, just like we should get mad. And let me say something else about God and anger as well. Anger isn't a switch that turns on full blast or off like my boiler does. Anger looks different with God and the God of Israel than with, say, the Babylonian or Greek gods, who seem to have two emotions, right? Happy or angry. There's a reason why in Greek mythology you don't get the gods angry at you. Many people, I think, have this view of anger even today. I have a close friend of mine who had a child with special needs who, after they were born, was approached by someone who literally said to them, "Oh, you and your wife waited too long to have kids." So thus, God was angry. I'm sorry, but anger doesn't work like that. Anger is an emotion, like anything, which is coupled with multiple emotions, right? Sadness, loss, mourning, loneliness, and empathy. So this oversimplistic infatuation of our society that has this focus on God anger equals God's punishment downright misses the entire point. We are tying two prayer quilts today, both for individuals who have a very tough prognosis and illness. And I want to say today that God is angry, not at either of them. It is completely against everything we understand and read about the God of Israel, our God, to even suggest that this is God's punishment. That's baloney. That's not what Jesus came to say. Instead, what this text of Isaiah, I believe, is pointing most clearly to is God being angry at the evil that is in this world. God is angry that struggle and suffering becomes invested in the bodies of fellow children of God. God is greatly disturbed with the families and walks with the families who walk with these individuals who care and help them. I talked about the beginning part of Isaiah focusing on forgetting who you belong to and the anger of God because of that. But the book of Isaiah continues. And at the end, it really lands on the subject of restoration. Our shoot shall come out of the branch of Jesse, we read, probably most famously from this section of Isaiah at Christmas time. Restoration. Perhaps this is a reminder to all of us that God's anger at forgetting and all the injustice in this world can be connected in restoration and in new life as well. Through God's anger, God is up to something and creating something new. So may these prayer quilts be a sign then, not just of our anger towards a world that is not fair, that is not just, that is not right in many ways, but also of a new life and a restoration. May our church work hard at not being a community that baits and switches people, but an authentic gathering of God's children who are called to reflect God's anger towards evil and injustice, as well as love towards the creation and the newness and restoration of life. Amen.